Are phones killing my brain?
I would argue our brains are more alive than ever. And it may not kill us, it may just inundate us too much.
The one parent that kept his children away from all things iPhone, iPads, was Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Business runs on WhatsApp. What am I doing these days? Consciously, I'm dialing up my Insta time.
I would say YouTube is less doom scrolling than Instagram is for sure.
How addictive are these tools?
You have been very kind to kind of oblige us. Why don't we get in guests who have come, people who we admire, CEOs, founders, executives, and two Gen Z folks, but, you know, successful in their own right and they're in their recent stages of their career, or if they're students in good colleges, really well, but have a very different worldview and have a discussion. Are phones killing my brain? How addicted are we to our phones? How much screen time there is? How lonely we are in the battle against screen time. There's always apps and there's always technology and there's always friends and there's so much peer pressure pushing us into the world of the device that aren't we even safe anymore? And that's the topic. Leave it open to the four of you.
Yeah, I mean, I think a fun way to maybe break the ice would be, what do you think is your most embarrassing, highest line item on your screen time? For me, it's YouTube. I spend an embarrassing amount of time on YouTube. That's where I consume most of my content. How about the rest of you?
Actually, it's interesting because YouTube is a rabbit hole situation. So are there few days in the week or the month that you have like eight hours of screen time, or is it 2-3 hours every day consistently?
No, I think it's a filler. So it's like, it's fairly consistent. It would be like end of the day, maybe if I'm on the road. That it's kind of like those in-between places where it...
Doom scrolling, or you look for stuff and like listen to like Marvel's opera?
I would say, yeah. I would say YouTube is less doom scrolling than Instagram is for me, for sure.
But YouTube is more than Instagram.
It is for me now. But that's because I had an intervention where I told myself that I was going to... I set like a 30-minute timer and I... let someone else keep the password, so I didn't know what the time was. So that was the only way that I completely got it out. Yeah.
Gauri, what about you?
Yeah, I think for me also, it's a toss-up between YouTube and WhatsApp. I've worked in internet companies all my life. So now it's like, you know, when you're making a movie, you can no longer enjoy the feeling of watching a movie. So it's very similar, where now that I know exactly what goes behind it, I know what it's tugging at my brain, what it's trying to pull out of me. So I've tried very similar things, right? These are all hacks that we're trying. We'll put different locks. We will try Pomodoro techniques on it. We won't scroll for a long time. But no, I'm pretty addicted to my phone as well, and I hate it. But
are you guys reflecting what your peers as well think? Or new? Are you guys exception in the sense and you want to like...
No, it's pretty pretty representative of everyone around me as well. It's a love-hate relationship. I think the biggest use case, I was discussing it with a couple of friends of mine, is this filler for dead time. There is so much dead time in our lives right now, whether it's waiting around for stuff, whether it's commute. That phone is just like an extension of your hand now. And it's an instant sort of dopamine into doing something. So... pretty similar for everyone, but we also hate the fact. So it's hate scrolling more than anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you want to get out of that trouble. It's almost like a paralysis, social paralysis now, that you keep going back.
Is it a classic addict behavior that once you take the shot and the high wears off, you feel you hate yourself for it?
Yeah, I think it's one of those learned behaviors which is becoming a lot more primal now.
Understand. Yeah. Just to give you guys context, Gauri works at Spotify, Avi works at McKinsey. So a lot of phone work. In different ways, of course. And frankly, I was talking to a product dude at Netflix, and they said that we want to do our best to be the second screen in your life.
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that even mean? And he said, no, because the first screen is always going to be your phone. I was like, but while watching Netflix, yeah, you're watching Netflix, but you're still on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that blew my mind, because I think...
You know,
it, of course I do. It is very, very deeply. So for me, one is, of course, because I run a consumer company that is advertising primarily on Instagram and YouTube and all of those. So for me, it's work. Then I run podcasts. So again, it becomes, I justify it by saying, well, this is work for me. I need to meet, but it's clearly an addiction.
Well, I think it's a choice. The business runs on WhatsApp. Our company runs on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And WhatsApp is now audio, video, everything. That's the primary medium of communicating to the teams, getting things done. Even when something is sent to me on email, a snapshot if it is urgent, my attention is sent on WhatsApp. I think the life is, it's the tool, it's the way email came into our life. What am I doing these days? Consciously, I'm dialing up my Insta time.
Oh, really?
very different from...
Consciously dialing up my Insta time.
Compared to where I'm, my starting point may be very different.
Yeah.
Because that's a medium where I want to learn. That's a medium where the interaction is the highest. Where the, if I'm in the business of influence, then the amplification of influence is highest on Instagram. Well, these guys are talking about addiction and, you know, the hate, etc. I think these are tools, and I don't dislike any tools. These are tools for amplification. Of course, when you have your first love, you're fascinated by it and you're consumed by it. But then you learn to grow out of it. That's the way I see it. I think I'm amazed how much force for good the phone and the technology is. I think we are training ourselves to cope with it, just the way we train ourselves for everything.
Interesting. Azim sir, since both of them said YouTube, you know, it's interesting, if I remember it correctly, if you were to watch all the videos uploaded on YouTube in a day, one day, total number of videos uploaded on YouTube, it will take you 80 years of continuous watching. That's the amount of data that's coming your way. So phone actually as an instrument has ended up bringing those who are close to us further away and those who are away from us close to us. So as an instrument, what it has done is that it has taken us away from the here and now to somewhere else. And that is, and, you know, a segue into the earlier discussion of fear of missing out. You know, now you are part of many more things happening around the world that your friends are doing. Or going through, you are part of it sitting here right now, you know, in this room. Everything is a tool. Tool in its own can neither be good or bad. It is always how it is used. I mean, the same energy that goes in the sun is a nuclear fusion. And that's the same energy, you know, that goes in a hydrogen bomb, you know. So the energy is the same. It's the use of that energy that is defining whether it is good or not good outcomes. And anything when it comes. So what has the phone done? Primarily, you know, if you see, first, it has put information on tap, that any information about anybody, anything you want is on tap, available to you free in this very instant. You don't have to ask anyone. Now, what AI is doing is it is putting intelligence on tap. So if you think you're addicted to your phone yet, you have no idea what is coming ahead. Now it is going to be, when at some stage they'll implant it into the brain. You know, that's the only thing that remains. Because this is going to go even further, because now AI will be available on tap. And effectively, what it will do is that whatever the human being can do, the whole replication will happen between these two. But, you know, I look after small business lending, and I have seen how the phone has changed the lives of people. Because what essentially it has done is that, you know, for example, every small business cannot have an EDC machine and accept credit cards. It was not financially viable. Now, with a UPI code, every small business, including a coconut vendor, is able to take money electronically into the account. Major change. Today, designers in Bombay work with weavers in Varanasi, sending them designs on WhatsApp. You know, they are making a sample, sending it back. And their entire business was working where earlier they had to take a train and travel all the way to show samples. Across, I mean, I can go on, you know, but the simple thing is that it has been a great force of good. And WhatsApp, essentially what it has done is that it has taken email and SMS and put it together in a more elegant UI. So effectively now it is the business tool communication channel as well. You know, whether you use it for personal business is all got mixed in. And I can't think of a single business today that can run without WhatsApp. How addictive are these things? Because for example, I read, and maybe the question of timing of exposure to screen time, and maybe you're probably in the best position to answer this, right? How addictive are these tools really? Because I read a report maybe a year back where they said that 4 in 5 girls who have exposure to social media under the age of 12 develop some or the other mental illness by the time they touch 16 to 18. And that number is 3.7 out of 5 boys, which is a little behind but not far behind. It's startlingly high amount of mental health association directly to phones. So the other day I was talking to a slightly skinny senior gentleman, probably 65, 68 years old. And I could see while I was talking to him that his attention was already on his phone. Yeah. On his phone, okay? I asked him, ki, aapko phone dekhte thi, a call aa raha hai kya? I'm thinking, then we'll go WhatsApp check karna. So then I'm assuming that is there an OTP? Is there a delivery boy somewhere at home? Someone is waiting for something urgent. He just wanted to check his phone to see whether he's gotten, you know, what messages have come. There were no new messages. But that urge was there. And in that 15-minute conversation, that urge was there at least 5 times.
Yeah.
And I cannot ignore the fact that this is probably WhatsApp's product manager doing a fantastic job more than this person's need to kind of check his phone. So do you think that we are alone in our journeys against the device? Well, I'm a huge believer that this is going to kill us. That's like that by you. I don't think it's a tool. No, I don't think it's a tool at all.
So I don't know if you've seen this Netflix documentary called The Social Dilemma.
Yeah.
I watched it when rose tinted glasses that social media is a force for good. I still believe it is. But my last stint at Twitter, now X, was the product manager of notifications. That was the first time I've faced a real, tangible, ethical dilemma in my life. Because my job was to chase CTR. I just needed to get someone to open their notification and check out what was happening early in the morning. The kind of data that we collected and the kind of data I was exposed to was startling. I knew when my users in all these different regions were most likely to check their phones. What were they most likely to engage with? Because of course, I have their interest imprint as well. I've collected so many implicit signals about what they are consuming. And my job was simply to send the right notification at the right time with the right context and content. And I felt like a hack. Because if someone were to do this to me, given how much thought process went into it, I was really astonished by some of the nonchalance that was going on. I spoke to some of my colleagues at Meta as well. So Twitter still, at that point, still had some checks and balances. We had guardrails. We can't send more than X notifications a day or a week, or you can't expose it to someone as much. But this is extremely real. So all I needed to get was to get my CTR up. But at that point, I realized, you know, hang on, we need to take a step back. If I start programming a person's life based on every little like 60, 70 character notification, this is going to be like a feeding loop that I'm inherently opposed to. So to come back to you, I think, you know, why we see it's killing our brains is perhaps because there's an inundation of constant overstimulation that our brain is exposed to. But I think there's also generational way of looking at it where why we despise it is because we have glorified for a long time physical labor, getting out, getting our hands dirty, doing something, building something. I think today what you were referring to, everything's on our phone, it's become cerebral labor. We are constantly inundated with information, content, work. Like the other thing that I missed was Slack is my probably third most open thing. I think just the labor definition has changed, but there's still work happening. I would argue our brains are more alive than ever. And it may not kill us. It may just inundate us with too much and it may require us to sort of pull back and make decisions better.
I think this is empowerment on a hose pipe. We're just getting wet right now because we're not trained. We're not coping with it. Yeah. But I know what you said in the Zoom call session that you did, because on the way driving here, I know exactly how you look at the squiggly career of yours, how you call yourself. Now, that is that addiction? No, it's smartness. It's smart behavior.
What is that? Sorry, what is that?
Her career choices. She calls them squiggly career choices. I know this, therefore I'm able to engage with you. But it's just that, and you mentioned you feel guilty. There are people who sell Coke to you. There are people who sell fries to you. They're very smart, very intelligent scientists who have been at it for such a long time. For generations, people have sold tobacco to us, all of us. It doesn't even have a positive side to it. But it's got all the addiction. The world has learned to cope with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The scientists are getting smarter, etc. But we have also learned how to dial back processed food. We have also learned. This is that state of new tools coming at us, new influences coming at us. Thoda abhi kapde gile ho gaye, we'll get drenched with the you know, the force that is coming at us. Don't know right now, but I believe that we'll all learn to take the good side more and shove the bad stuff away.
I also feel like Pramod, in fact, told me that, you know, in Ashoka University, in their convocation, their children, they had kids support Gaza, support Palestine, support Israel, like badges And he was like, I cannot believe that these are the issues that people have in, you know, 2 hours away from NCR, when there are thousands of other issues that are more local in nature and probably far more intense for their own friends and families. It's a direct result of everything that is being shown to them on their screen. And they have not. So the issue with social media is not only screen time and so on, but it's also shaping the way people think, shaping the prioritization of issues in their mind. And then you become almost a pawn in this game of influence between, and you have no chance. Like, you stand no chance against a Twitter or a Meta or a YouTube. And that's you gotta argue what.
I think I'm vulnerable to it. I think the one thing I'd like to respond is that I think we need to move past seeing them as tools. So this is besides the fact that, you know, besides a judgment on whether it's going to be useful long term or not. I think we can, we don't know that, right? I think we still have to not see them as tools, because they're essentially platforms, and that's a very big distinction, right? Like, you wouldn't see the invention of like a derivatives exchange or a stock market as a tool, even though it's essentially a tool to exchange. It becomes so much more. It becomes like a platform and makes you create things. And the way that those platforms are structured influence how we use them. And the real danger, I think, that Shantanu was hinting at is that we are not in control of how that platform is structured. And we're seeing that more and more, right? Like, I think YouTube's a great example. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, YouTube, when you open the homepage, you would see videos first and primarily entirely of people that you're subscribed to.
Correct.
So if I go and follow 25 accounts, I'm going to see whatever they've posted. Now it's moved to the similar model that Instagram has. Even Instagram was like that at some point. And therefore, we're seeing a place where the entire world view every single, like maybe what I see physically with my eyes for more hours of a day than I do outside. It's not true for all of us, but something that you're so closely interacting with is entirely impacted by an algorithm, which is prioritizing like short-term dopamine, very similar to nicotine and cigarettes.
You cover like the dark lungs on the back, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have the dark lungs on YouTube. It's in
here.
No, so after how many decades of active nicotine marketing, did the lungs come on the back? I'm saying when you pan out at a societal timeline, we're talking about 2 year, 3 year timeline. When you take a societal view, the society will learn how not to drink and drive. People drunk and drove back in the day, and it was normal.
Yeah.
How not to do jaywalking, how smoking is bad, visibly and socially bad, how public spaces are now deny you from smoking. Society learns. When you look at a decadal or a generational time span or a nation's time span, then I have great faith in the fact that we as a cohort, as a social being, as nation states, as cultures, we'll find a way to learn and find the balance, because we don't like to harm ourselves as people. Rest of it is transition.
No, but I think we're definitely vulnerable to it. I'm scared for my parents and my grandparents.
Yeah.
Their primary means of consumption is WhatsApp forwards. And not just me. Like, I think for my family, they can still now start discerning it. But for bulk of India's middle class, who's consuming primarily information on WhatsApp, their opinions around politics, economics, international affairs, everything is being shaped by popular consensus around things. So one, there's this so digital herd mentality that's starting to kick in. Second, amongst Gen Zs, I'm seeing that it's cool to be woke, and of course, fashionable to go through a lot. I know you're laughing because it's ironical coming from the
university.
But I have a lot of discussions about woke Gen Zs in my spare time outside of cameras.
No, but I mean, I don't think that the culture is all too bad. But for example, the example that you brought up, whether it's a civil war or an international war that's happening, it's almost that you feel like you're on the fringes if you don't subscribe to a popular notion at this point. So talking about something like this is almost expected of you. And if you participate, you feel like you're part of something larger. So there's also this sense of association that everyone wants to derive, and a sense of validation that you get from being a part of popular culture. But I 100% agree that it is wiring our brain towards certain topics in a certain way. And I think the agency to discern is becoming more about, when you step back, how does your offline indicators influence how much you're able to pull back out of it? Because if you're constantly in the pit, it's becoming hard. It's like quicksand a little bit.
The one parent that kept his children away from all things iPhone, iPads, for Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
but see, we cannot be Judaites and argue against technology. Technology will do its bit and it will move forward. You can have semantic discussions, mental models. But the reality is that the phone is here to stay and grow. And everything around it, marketing has changed. I mean, today, how does a company build a brand? Earlier, you could advertise in newspapers, that's gone. You know, then you could advertise on television, you know, that's more or less gone. How does a company build a brand? You know, so then this is going to happen, you know, and these tools will be used. So I don't think that there is a way to fight it. What is a choice that we have? That needs to be exercised. The same thing can be used to develop knowledge. Now, today, I'm learning Spanish. Using the same machine. I'm learning physics because I'm just interested in physics. So I'm learning physics, you know, just because it interests me. I'm learning astronomy and what is happening, beyond the world that we see. It's a choice. It's a choice that each one of us makes, and we have to learn to make better choices, not blame the instrument. You know, that is just not on.
So to your point of saying, you know, everybody's consuming WhatsApp forwards and getting influenced. If we were having the same discussion 4 years back, you would have said the same thing about these live news channels.
Yeah.
So people who have idle time and are passive consumers will find Saas Bahu serials in one era, will find loud news channels in the other era, and will find WhatsApp channels. So to me, the social trait is the same. Pehle, they were eating rice, now they're eating millets and cookies. But the behavior is the same. A lot of people are consumers of information. We are in the abundance of availability, therefore it's startling us. But it's a pattern. So to me, the creators, whether you are creators of daily soaps in that era, whether you are creators of television debates in that era, whether you are creators of memes in this era, are the powerful people. Yes, the tools are getting powerful, therefore we are seeing more and more of it. But even back in the day, they ruled what people watched and people consumed. So, just that the distance is shortened, everybody is a creator and everybody is a consumer, we are saying, but if you said, you know, Balaji Telefilms produces this, we were at a distance. We had the choice of either ignoring or consuming. Now we are saying we have the choice of producing, participating. So, acha hai, but it's not unique. This problem is not unique, it's just higher.
I just feeling that time spans are getting crunchy too much.
Yeah.
So with cigarettes, for example, it took you 30 years to kind of develop cardiovascular vulnerability, and then after that, by that time, there was regulation and so on. In this case, I think there is weaponization of outrage that's happening a lot. There is echo chambers which are becoming dangerous. Like, I was having a discussion with my mom for 45 minutes on this Samay Ranveer thing, by the way. I told her it's not the biggest issue in the world, but she was genuine full of the opinion. Because she had been inundated by WhatsApp forwards and it was formerly on her YouTube feed a lot, she genuinely felt like this is what is going to crush the moral fabric of Indian society. Because that's what YouTube and Instagram and WhatsApp had thrown at her in so much quantity that perspective on it was kind of gone. And I think intelligent people are now a lot more vulnerable as well. It's not just people who are idle or people who are, you know, in small echo chambers of their own. I think older people, like you're right, I think parents and grandparents are very, very vulnerable. But it's, and younger people are also vulnerable. So now I'm starting to see children in schools and colleges now starting to get distanced from people who have different opinions. I don't know whether you guys see this, that people associate to a particular opinion or kind of way of thought. And if you have a friend who disagrees with that way of thought, then you don't remain a friend anymore. So you're only would have friends who agree with you, and then the diversity of thought has gone, and all that is fueled by the phone. It's not like generational conditioning is really changing or parenting is changing, I think, or even college systems or work systems are changing, but I think the phone is doing that. And I think the strong view that the cons far outweigh the pros. I just feel like if we do not have reels and shorts, I think that's 50% of the problem solved. But anyway, thank you so much. This is a fantastic discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.